Welcome to the Daily VFN Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
I'm John Ramos, and welcome to VFN TV and the Daily VFN Radio Program. We want to welcome all of our viewers and listeners on the Gulf Coast with Christian Television Network, and of course all of those that are gathering all around the nation. Here to encourage you is the man, Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
And Steve Kolaszewski.
Good day, sir.
Good day, good day. We have so much to be talking to you today about. We're excited about gathering with you. We have some information we wanted to share about Israel and what is going on with Protective Operation Edge. We're also going to be sharing today an awesome testimony about a former Muslim who actually had a vision of Jesus. And it's called Face to Face with Jesus. She wrote a book about it. It's amazing. And we're going to share a little bit of insight about how she encountered the Lord. But I believe it'll bring you great hope and great encouragement. And also in today's program, we want to be talking about some of the different things that are happening in Congress with the Congressional Prayer Room. Many folks are not aware of you know, what's happening. There's a movement now to basically bring back In God We Trust. I think it was President Eisenhower who was the first one who said, we want to make this the motto of our country. I didn't know it was the actual motto of the country, but it says, In God We Trust. And so we're going to be sharing about that and talking about that. But we have congressmen, elected men and women who represent us, the people, in Washington, D.C., and they actually have a prayer caucus. It's at the time where these senators and congressmen get together across party aisles to come and pray. And they pray about how they should vote, and they pray about important matters in our country. And you're going to hear firsthand from them and some of the things that they're planning to do. But before we kind of jump on into that, I know, Steve, that you had an encounter that was quite interesting.
Do you think his eyes just perked
sure was
up
interesting?
Right there?
Well, you know, some tasks are quite simple for some to do, and then there's some tasks
that are
difficult.
Doesn't meet the criteria, though.
Yeah, well, we had a time of fellowship hanging out the other day, and I was told this interesting story. And, you know, when I hear interesting stories, I just go, you know, check mark. We'll bring that up on TV and the radio. But I heard this story about getting pizza. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to
us
what actually happened?
Well, if my memory serves me correctly, please step in at any time. No.
We will.
I'm sure you would. You're very faithful in that area. But I love pizza, you know, and we had a good time with family. And I'm from up north, so we have a little chain up north called Hungry Howie's. And if you're not familiar with Hungry Howie's, if you've never been to Hungry Howie's, it's just fun.
Is that where it came from?
They didn't know Hungry Howie's up north. I thought Sal's Pizza was from up north.
I think we exported it up to you.
Yeah.
I think it started out here.
I'm going to have to call you out on that one. I'm going to say no, sir. So this is, I used to live on the east side of town, and I always go to the same place. And where we were heading, I was just doing errands. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to pick up some pizza, so I'll just Google it real quick, or MapQuest it, whatever I had, called the number real quick, and I was like, yeah, you know, right on the intersection, gave him a call. Hey, I'll be there, you know, 10:40. Need some pizza. Cool, great. Do what I need to do, show up, walk right in the door, and I'm like, hey, my name's Steve. I'm here to pick up the three pizzas I ordered. And they're like, no, we haven't had any orders come in yet. And I said, yeah. I spoke with Matt, and the lady at the counter just like, nope, no Matt works here.
Matt who?
And I said, are you serious? And I look back on my phone, and I says, is your number, you know, I read it off, and she's like, no, that's not our number. And I said, this is 9th and Creighton, right? And basically the intersection, she says, yeah. So I was like, all right, okay. So I call, and I'm sitting there, and it's ringing. The guy picks up, and I says, hey, is this Matt? He says, yeah, this is Matt. I says, oh, okay. Where are you located? And he says, 9th and Creighton. I says, okay. Yeah, my name is Steve, and I ordered the three largest. He's like, yeah, we're waiting for you. I says, where are you located? And he says, 9th and Creighton. So I'm sitting there standing in the pizza shop looking outside the window, and I'm thinking, okay, that's Creighton. That's 9th. And he says, yeah, Little Caesars, 9th and Creighton. And I'm looking, and if you've ever been in
Little Caesars.
Little Caesars. Yes, that's what I said, Little Caesars. And I'm looking at these giant yellow walls and realizing, oh, I'm standing in Hungry Howie's, which is not Little Caesars. And he says, no, this is not Hungry Howie's. And I'm just like, wow, I am that guy. And over the phone, he says, you are that guy. And the girl to my left says, you are that guy. And I was like, wow, okay, awesome. So I go to walk out towards my car. He says, you're walking in your car right now. I says, yeah, I'm walking towards my car right now. He says, all right, cool, man. Well, we'll see you. And he was literally across the street. So, and then I so lovely walked over to get my pizza at not Hungry Howie's.
Yeah.
Walked over to Little Caesars, and so friendly as they were and welcoming, my pizzas were labeled that guy.
Who does that? Who calls, orders pizza? I mean, I have to say.
That sounds like something you would do.
Well, no. See, I'm a
that
guy
sounds
that,
eerily
no,
familiar.
No. See, I know my pizza. I know my pizza. See, you know, you started this whole thing off saying I love pizza and all this, that. And I have to say, if you loved your pizza, I think you would know.
I dialed
where
the wrong
you
number.
Ordered it.
I know.
So who
I
did you mean to call? I'm confused.
I meant to
now.
Call Hungry Howie's, and that was the sad thing too, is because I always order from Hungry Howie's. So before I left, I was like, I called like the manager was back there, and he like by this point the whole everybody who's working at that Hungry Howie's is at the counter just watching what's going on, and I was like, I'm so sorry, your pizza is so much better.
Oh,
I always order from there, and they're just like, oh, it's okay. Well, when you're done with that pizza, come on back and we'll make more pizza for you. And he's like, oh, okay.
Like yeah. I said, Pat, if you would know, if you see, he started out with saying he loved pizza. I would think that you would have had them on speed dial. See, I have my favorite place on speed dial because, you know, I won't have to look it up. But we're going to give you a pass, that guy, and we're going to make sure that we print out maps and make everything available to you so you can go get your pizza.
The sad thing
is
I do have it on speed dial.
He keeps coming back. Mm.
So look at that.
You keep stepping your foot further.
I'm just letting you know I was so far out of it trying to get things done.
Hey, it could have been a whole lot worse.
You got to watch yourself you don't realize that you just might end up being that guy.
Hey, you could be that guy. Don't be that guy. Know who you're calling.
I think it's
so
time to confiscate the melancholy card officially.
Yeah.
There we go. You need to turn it in.
There we go.
That's it. You've been carded.
I've been told.
Unbelievable. Well, back into some more, serious news. We're going to talk about Israel and Operation Protective Edge. I just want to say, I look at Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and I go, man, this guy is such an amazing leader. I say this often, and I was talking to my sons about it the other day, and I'm thinking, you know, my son asked me, who's that? And I started telling him, you know, what was happening. And, you know, it's so encouraging to see leadership rise up and not cave in to public opinion. I mean, when the whole world is around, surrounding you and telling you, stop it, knock it off, don't defend yourself, you know, you can, in your very tiny, small country, you could see where maybe some of these countries begin to waver and say, okay, maybe we need to. But I just love how he just says, hey, this is what we got to do. This is what we're going to do. And we're going to get the job done. And he was recently interviewed by Fox News, and basically he said, listen, because, you know, everyone's pressing him onto when's this going to stop? And it's interesting that you don't see anyone from Hamas being interviewed. Where are they?
Exactly.
Where are they? You know,
or asking them those questions.
Yeah, where are they asking them these questions? I have not seen the leader of Hamas yet. I mean, is he still in the tunnel? I don't get it. But it's like, come on now. Why? You know, all these questions are being lobbed here at the Prime Minister of Israel, and basically he said that, hey, listen, much military power, you know, as much as necessary, we're going to be able to, you know, put in there, basically, and we're going to fight for as long as it takes against terror and basically restore peace to the country. And that's really their main, mission here, is to bring back the quiet, he said. They're going to use as much force as is necessary. I mean, you got to get the job done. So whatever it takes is whatever it takes. And basically, he says, as long as it takes, that's what it's going to be. So we can't give you a time frame, nor are we going to, you know, project to our enemies, we're going to pull out of, you know, in a certain amount of time of this area. No, we're going to go in, faithfully take care of it, and get the job done. And they're finding these tunnels. I mean, you know, today they have already destroyed 32 underground tunnels, 59 feet in the ground, 1 mile long from the Gaza Strip into Israel. And they found a cache of weapons and all sorts of rockets and RPGs and all kinds of things like that. They even found a little motorcycle inside there. Wow. And I mean, they're literally driving underground. And the whole idea is to pop up in Israel in someone's backyard and to kidnap, you know, either a soldier or a civilian and bring them down into this tunnel. I mean, just think about it. It just sounds so demonic. And it's like, what is that? You know, when your enemy has to go underground and hidden, you know, to come get you, it's like, if you're going to fight, you know, let's do this the right way, you know. But it's just so devious and so just, you know, it cloaking in darkness. And just kind of reminds me a lot of times of how the enemy operates, never out and open, never, but it's always in secret and deceptive ways, to the point now that, you know, we've shared this extensively, and even people know in Gaza are even denying this, that children are being used as human shields. And so there's a high death rate, which, to be honest, is very, very sad to see so many Palestinians, believe over 1,600 have been killed. And it's sad. You think, wow, you know, this is loss of life. And we're talking about, you know, civilians that live there. But this is happening because the Hamas terrorists are putting children and women and families in harm's way. They're putting rockets inside of homes, inside of hospitals. In fact, they said that a university was being used to research all sorts of weaponry. And so they had to go in and destroy that. A mosque, they did the same thing in a mosque here recently. They put a whole bunch of rocket launchers in a mosque.
Schools, same thing.
Schools. And so they have to come out. In fact, Israel said that they took out in the last 24 hours 200 targets, and in particular mosques that concealed weapons. And they said, listen, we've got to get the job done. And so now you're hearing you know, some support from the United States. It kind of comes in and out. You have John Kerry kind of doing his thing, the president saying something else. But someone else has stepped into this conversation, which I thought was quite interesting. And, you know, the president has many advisors, but there seems to be just one advisor who has been known to be the senior advisor, and that's Valerie Jarrett. She was born in Iran, and she was the one who actually hired Michelle Obama. And then before she was the first lady back in Chicago, and they, you know, were able to talk to Barack at that time, not the president. And so this relationship has been around for a long, long time, and she's, you know, helped them out into the White House. But when we get back from break, we're going to talk about some recent comments that Valerie Jarrett has actually spoken out. And we're going to talk about that more when we get right back from the break. You don't want to miss it.
You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget, you can locate us at VFNTV.com. We'll be right back.
Are you or someone you know having difficulties hearing? If you answered yes, then maybe it's time to contact the professional staff at Ears to Hear Hearing Center, where they improve the quality of life for the hearing impaired and their families, by testing and fitting and dispensing the best hearing aid for the patient's hearing loss, lifestyle, and budget. 3 convenient locations on the Gulf Coast to serve your needs. Don't miss one more word. Call today and be on your way to enjoying the gift of hearing.
As a supervisor in the workplace, can I pray with a coworker? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
I'm a supervisor in an office, and I was recently told that I cannot express my opinion in any way in matters regarding faith or religion or politics. I was also counseled that I cannot pray with staff members in or out of the office, you know, if they approach me.
Well, the idea that your workplace would be a religious-free zone is just absolutely incorrect. And a Bible study or praying with another employee, as long as it's not disruptive to the workplace, that is really what the biggest issue is. We've got great resources, by the way, available on our website at aclj.org. And I'll tell you what I'll do. You hang on the line here, Kim. I'm going to get you in touch with our legal staff at the American Center for Law and Justice, and we're going to get you some help on the situation right away.
The American Center for Law and Justice is dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Visit us at aclj.org. That's aclj.org.
Oh, my goodness. Listen. man, what the Lord is doing. If you missed, and you've got to catch it, in regards to Ezekiel 38 and 39, make sure you get a chance to go and listen to it. You can go to VFNTV.com and get the podcast. I'd like to give a big shout out to all of our podcast listeners are out there, because that's kind of how we are today. Everybody's so mobile. Things are moving so quickly. You need to listen to it when you need to listen to it, and you need to listen to what you need to listen to when you're listening to it. And you can do that by downloading our podcast. Just go to VFNTV.com, click on the podcast. Click on the podcast, and you get whatever format that you need. What happens, it just gets downloaded in your stuff somehow, and you can play it like you play a record. No, a CD. I'm sorry, a CD.
What's a CD?
Download, I guess. And you can, and it's just really cool because then you have it. Think about this. You know, remember all the years that, yeah, buy the tape. Buy the, we're giving it to you.
There
it's
you
yours.
Go.
Have it freely.
Free.
You know, freely, the Lord's given it to us. We give it to you. Go to VFNTV.com and download the podcast today. Your future may depend upon it.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome back. I'm John Ramos, and joining me back from the break is Steve and Pat. And we're talking about Operation Protective Edge in Israel and Israel's right to defend herself from enemies who are firing rockets into their country. And we've been just saying that just it's amazing to see leadership rise up to, you know, to the place that, it is there in Israel, where they're able to kind of stay and stand even when it stinks, and not back down to any kind of outside pressure. And believe me, there is a ton of pressure on Israel. And Valerie Jarrett had some kind of interesting remarks here, but before we do talk about Valerie, I do want to share that, you know, an update that's occurred that CBN's reporting that this offensive, remember, the whole idea that why Israel is occupying or went into Gaza is to, you know, do a thorough job in removing the tunnels. They had to go, you know, on the ground, and Steve, you know this, is being in the military, you got to know what you got to be able to see what's there. How is that? I mean, when you, because so many things are hidden and you don't know, and you're in foreign territory. What is that like when you have to search for a rocket underneath, you know?
Well, urban warfare is definitely, it's all-consuming. The best thing that you can really just think about is the fact that, imagine danger 360 degrees all around you. You don't know the next door, whether it's going to be hostile. You don't know if somebody's going to be coming at you with a gun. You don't know if a child's going to be there. When you're walking down a street, you've got windows all over the place. There could be bombs. There could be rockets. And if you do receive mortar fire, it could be from five blocks away. And it really makes it a whole complex environment, because you are basically six guys, depending on who you're operating with, and you're fighting a village. You're fighting a city. And that's the hard thing is that it's really stacked against you. And it makes that objective that much more harder, where it's not much it's not a straightforward, hey, I can see this guy, this is where I'm going. You really have to pay attention. There's unlimited variables that you got to be aware of.
Makes me want to, you know, pray more for the IDF soldiers, because you're looking at a continual state of stress, I can only imagine, you know, with that high intensity, because you don't know, you're doing your very best not to harm a civilian. You know, that's the whole thing. You want to protect life. So you're being aware, you're looking intently, because you know that if you pull the trigger, you can kill the wrong person. These bullets kill.
And that's what's even more just alarming when you look at some of the pictures that the IDF have posted, is that a lot of these tunnels,
Israeli Defense Forces,
correct, they're in homes, and you'll see where it's just like they've just kind of very, you know, they've
concealed the corner of a house.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even realize it, but that's the thing. It's unconventional warfare. You have to be able to begin to put yourself in that thought process of the enemy. It's like, okay, where would I place this? And when you're seeing some of the things that the Israeli Defense Forces are seeing, I mean, it's very difficult. And a lot of times it's not a cut and dry situation. It's very complex.
Well, CBN's reporting that Israel is in the process of pulling some of their troops out already. Seems that they're getting closer and closer to finishing their objective, which is really, you know, getting rid of these tunnels so that and destroying the network that Hamas has, kind of putting this to bed, mm-hmm. so they don't have to deal with this, hopefully ever, but at least for a long time. You know, they say that each of those tunnels, there's a cost, a value of $3 million per tunnel. That's wow. $90 million that could have been used towards resources for their own people. I mean, we shared previously on VFN TV that the electricity went out. They have, most of the country doesn't even have electricity. Mm-hmm. They can't bake their bread. People are suffering there. And it's like, instead of trying to wage war against the people that actually gave you the land, you know, why don't you just enjoy life and use those resources to build, you know, your society? But a lot of they don't produce much. It's a very high unemployment rate. And a lot of their money comes from Saudi Arabia and different places, hundreds of millions of dollars, because they're not able to even support themselves. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to fight and, you know, do terrorist attacks the entire time, it's not going to go well. So, you know, they're starting to draw out and pull folks out. But there were some really serious things that have occurred, because the Obama administration has really started to condemn Israel and their attacks, especially when school was hit. And reportedly, you know, and CBN's reporting this, that Benjamin Netanyahu told the administration, basically, don't ever second guess him again. Mm. I mean, because at this point, you know, can you blame them at this mm-hmm. point? You know, they're trying to do the very best that they can do. And I heard
they're pouring rockets on their heads continually, day in and day out.
Exactly.
And they're supposed to sit there and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. And do nothing, right? Ridiculous. And they're condemning them. And then they're highlighting the fact that these children are being murdered. And it's like, well, okay, then you need to address the people who are actually putting the children in harm's way, which would be Hamas. But you didn't see that, you know, you hardly see any Hamas people at all. Mm-hmm. It's like, where are they? Where are you? Mm-hmm. When is the international community going to hold Hamas accountable for the atrocity? Mm-hmm. And the UN is continually trying to go against Israel. And again, the UN Secretary General, I believe, is Ban Ki-moon. He called it a moral outrage and a criminal act, and demanded a quick investigation. And it's like, are you serious? Are you serious? And so, you know, pray for Israel. Pray that they finish what they have to finish, get mm-hmm. the job completed, that we can restore peace, as the Prime Minister says, and quiet back into their country. They continue to live and continue to transact and do business. You know, on a previous program, we talked and shared about former Israeli ambassador Michael Oren, and he was being interviewed in a city in Israel. Mm-hmm. And he says, look, this is a great country. Still, under the barrage of rockets, we will not be deterred. We will not be moved back. We're still conducting business. We're still living lives. We're still moving forward, because we're not going to allow the terrorists to interrupt our lives. We're not going to allow them to win. We're going to continue to persevere. And so, but yet, in the midst of that, you would think by now that there would be a huge international outcry. Where are the leaders? Where is everyone stepping up right now around the world to say, Hamas, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But instead, they voted for war crimes, to investigate war crimes against Israel, and 17 nations abstained from voting, and only one nation said no, and that was the United States. Mm-hmm. One nation. But now you have Valerie Jarrett, who's being interviewed, and she was discussing, and she says, Israeli strikes near civilian havens in Gaza were indefensible. And she goes on, she was on Face the Nation, she goes on to say, it's a devastating situation. Although she says Israel has the right to defend itself, and we're Israel's staunchest ally, but you also can't condone the killing of all these innocent children. And so, as you see, there's conversation of both sides of the mouth. It's like no one's trying to condone any kind of civilian killing. In fact, you hear the prime minister, you hear many people, mm-hmm. you hear soldiers, IDF soldiers saying, listen, we're doing our very best not to kill children, but what do you do when the enemy is hiding yeah. behind?
And that's what's that. It's amazing how one-sided the conversation is. And what is so devastating is the fact, like we're talking about, is Hamas is consistently using schools, universities, mosques, homes of Palestinians mm-hmm. for their weapon caches, mortar mm-hmm. fire. They're shooting from there. And that's the thing, is like, it's a whole bunch of like, you know, hit and move. They'll shoot from a window and then leave the house real quick. They'll respond to the muzzle flash. They'll respond to the fire and then say, look at you, you shot a home. And that's the hard thing. It's like, you can't get sucked into all of the pressure against Israel and saying they're wrong. When you look at it, it's just like, okay, well then stop placing all of your weapon systems, stop placing all of your caches in, you know, locations of importance in a school.
Right.
And it's just like, what, that condemnation needs to be put upon Hamas and saying, okay, that needs to stop, because yeah, you're looking at the response to it.
Yeah. You know, it's for us as believers and as Christians to understand, listen, the world may be duped, but we can't be duped. Mm-hmm. And we can't buy into this narrative. We just need to remember that we need to stay focused on Israel, praying for God to continue to intervene and move on their behalf, that no Israelis will be killed and there's life to be over, but to bring peace and restoration to Israel and to put an end to this terrorist organization, Hamas, and every other nation that would think they're going to rise against Israel. I think that one of the best things that's coming out of all of this is showing these other nations, shock and awe. This is what happens when you mess with Israel. You want to think twice about ever doing that again. More when we get right back from this break.
You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget, you can locate us at VFNTV.com. We'll be right back.
Andrew grew up in South Florida. I think a very typical life for a young boy, always playing outside. He had lots of friends. He loved to be active. He's always been very fit and adventurous. He was really into go-karts and ATVs and dirt bikes. He was always involved, you know, playing Little League baseball. He loved PE. He enjoyed to serve. In his teenage years, he would serve at the church. Had a great network of social friends. Just an easy, fun-loving guy who loved to be outside, loved to partake in the South Florida weather and the activities that are natural to South Florida.
On March 31st of this year, Sergeant Andrew Tamarisi, a 25-year-old decorated U.S. Marine inactive reservist, was on his way to San Diego from a border town near Mexico when he took a wrong turn onto a highway ramp he believed led north to the city. Within a few hundred feet, the ramp instead swept south with no turnaround access. It was a funnel straight into Mexico. Sergeant Tamarisi had just moved to San Diego from Florida and was unfamiliar with the area, which is notorious for confusing even local travelers. Having not yet secured permanent housing, he had all his belongings in his truck, including personal firearms legally purchased in the U.S. With no American presence at the border, Sergeant Tamarisi tried getting help from 911 to no avail. Despite having told the Mexican authorities he had personal firearms in his truck, and despite his explanation that he never intended to enter Mexico, and his request to turn back, Mexican authorities arrested Andrew on weapons charges. He was placed into the general population at La Mesa State Penitentiary in Tijuana, where his life was threatened by both inmates and guards. After 35 days in a four-point restraint, Sergeant Tamarisi was moved to El Hongo Federal Prison, where he's guarded 24/7 in solitary confinement. Andrew Tamarisi has served our country with honor and distinction. He served two tours in Afghanistan, received a battlefield promotion, survived a roadside bomb, and saved the lives of eight Marines. And he was in the process of overcoming his PTSD. Now, Andrew is fighting for his freedom. He's fighting for his life. And he needs our help. You can help by going to AndrewFreedomFund.com and signing the petition to President Obama to work for Andrew's release. You can also help by contributing to offset costs of his legal defense and other expenses. Help bring Andrew home.
We have a great way for your VFN Radio listeners to connect with us beyond the program. So many of our VFN Radio listeners want more. Well, we have more for you. You can go to VFNTV.com and select VFN Torch. When you see the VFN Torch, you'll be able to get our highlights where we take the program beyond just what you hear on the radio. You'll see videos, you'll have pictures, and so much more. Not only will you be able to listen to these and watch more content, but you have the ability to email them to your friends, to your family, and spread the word. Let me tell you something. Take VFN Radio to the next level. Get more by going to VFNTV.com and select the VFN Torch now.
And he came and he was so excited because he found out how to bring God's presence in. He wanted the power of God, the presence of God, who delivered him through all these things. And he's dancing with all of his might. He's dancing and bringing in the Ark of the Covenant, and he's dancing so much, and all the flutes and musicians and all the things going on, and he dances literally out of his clothes. And today we would say all he had on was his boxers by the time he danced, but he was so excited. He didn't care what people thought about him. God is showing me that if we want what Charles had in 1906, we got to believe that. We don't care. The thing that Charles had going for him, people already hated him already. You know, get hated by somebody. Jiminy, they probably do already. They're just flattering you. But listen, they hated him already. He was rejected because he was an African-American. And this evilness inside of this nation, the history that happened in this nation, he was over folks already. He didn't care what they said. You need to get over them. I mean, God specifically spoke to me in so many different ways. I mean, you're living right now. We're meeting in this studio that was founded, this community was founded in 1908, the very same time that Azusa Street was being poured out. This community was founded because it was water that was brought here to this particular community. Happened during Azusa Street. I'm going off to spend time with God, and they said, listen, we're going to put you in 1906, the unit. The Holy Spirit says, that's the year Azusa Street happened. I'm like, really? And I go and look, it's like, yeah, it is. And then I'm going there, and then all of a sudden, a South African calls me in the place of sabbatical in America, and he tells me what America needs is another Azusa Street, and he begins to pray for me. I'm like, oh my goodness, it's going to happen if we believe.
You've just been listening to a moment from the VFN Dream Center. Find out more. Join the dream at VFNDreamCenter.org. That's VFNDreamCenter.org.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome back. I'm John Ramos, and joining me back from the break is Pat and Steve. And we want to talk about Sergeant Tamarisi. He is a Marine that has been jailed in Mexico for taking a wrong turn. And he's going to court, and we want to be able to pray for his release. It's a travesty that a Marine, one who fought for us, did two tours of duty in Afghanistan, has been jailed in Mexico and has not been released. And you would think that the most powerful nation in the world could pick up a phone and say,
let him go
immediately.
Yeah,
immediately. And it really is sad. And you think about, I mean, just to give you just a look at the big picture here. Mm-hmm. When the United States can't make a simple phone call to Mexico, we're not talking about Russia. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We're not talking about Saudi Arabia, Iran. We're talking about Mexico. And we can't release a Marine? There's a problem there. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show you where our country lies. And you know, I just look at some past presidents and I think that, you know, this probably wouldn't have happened on another watch. But you just look at what's happening overall. This is not a good place for us to be. And so there's some questions regarding Sergeant Tamarisi, and Fox is putting this out. We're just going to share just a couple of them, just see if we can give you some insight into what's happening and what has transpired. But one of the questions is, how could Sergeant Tamarisi have made a wrong turn in Mexico? And we've reported on this, you know, extensively, but you know, based upon our understanding and even video footage, it's very easy to do because it's a complex highway system, and you can make an easy wrong turn. I mean, make a wrong turn in the United States. You can imagine, you know.
Yeah, right. There, in your neighborhood.
Listen, you can drive in New York. That's a whole different ball game. But you made a wrong turn. It's easy. It's possible, especially there. And my understanding is that he actually even called 911 as he was approaching the border and even tried to get out. And they were waving him in. And so he just kind of followed protocol and went through. And so that was one of the questions. He says, why did he have guns with him? Again, you know, he had just got back from doing his tours. And, and as Steve has shared with us, listen, you kind of carry everything you have because you ain't got no home. You've been at war. Right. And he's had all his things together. He has his guns, his backpack, his change of clothes, and he's just coming back. So it's reasonable that a Marine who's been using guns for the last two tours in Afghanistan would have them with his belongings. And so he actually
He may not have been specifically using them on deployment, but they were personal guns, like it says, that he purchased within the country.
Right. And they talk about, you know, what is his defense strategy? Mm-hmm. This thing is going to go to court. And they said it could be as long as November before he could actually be released. You know, supposedly a judge is supposed to decide. No jury is supposed to decide all of this. And you're thinking, really? Really? If we can't get a Marine out of Mexico, what kind of doubt does that put over many Americans if you travel overseas that your country is going to be able to help you out and get you out of there? And so we will definitely want to pray for this young man. Pray for him like he was your own son. I mean, these are one of our soldiers. You know, I've had military. We have friends. We have Steve who served military. You know, to see a soldier like that being treated and, I think, left abandoned, you know, my personal opinion, we say leave no soldier on the field. I'm
we're doing it right now. That's the sad thing. And when you look at it, and a lot of people don't really connect that paradigm, but in the culture of the Marine Corps, you don't show weakness. You don't express, hey, I need help, because, you know, it's a very intense community, not just on the front lines, but just back in the rear or in your barracks or, you know, in the gym. And the fact that, like it was sharing, that Sergeant Tamarisi recently finished his time in the Marine Corps, and he's already talking about going to a doctor to try to help with his PTSD. And if you don't know what that is, PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's basically a natural response to an unnatural occurrence of just stress, you know, death, or the things that you've seen in war. You come back and you're having a very difficult time. I mean, I personally experienced that. So the fact that a Marine is within a matter of weeks coming home and saying, I need help, that's a huge sign. Yeah. And we'll actually make sure that there's one of the recent articles that we had. We'll make sure it's a related content. But there was a specific 911 call, and you can listen to his voice. He's just asking for help. He's actually, one of the times that he calls, he's actually already across the border. He's like, hey, I just want to know, you know, if you guys can, you know, send something. You know, they're searching my car, and I'm okay. I just want to make sure. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but go back and listen to this, and it's just like, he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
He simply made a wrong turn, and now he's still there, and he's been in there since, I think it was
July. So it's been quite a while. I mean, he's been there for many days.
Yeah.
But when you say that, I think about what has happened with Israel and soldiers in times past. When they've, in an act of terror, when they've kidnapped a soldier, Israel has exchanged up to 1,000 Palestinian prisoners, you know, for one soldier at a time. They've given up hundreds in an act of terror. This is not even an act of terror. This is not even an act of war. And we can't get a Marine. We can't get a soldier who made a wrong turn. And it's not like he's being detained in the country club. I mean, he's been hogtied. He's been assaulted. You know, the guy has been through, I mean, traumatic experiences. And he just came back from war. Yeah. And to be treated like this, and then I think abandoned by you know, our government, is a travesty. What does that tell our other armed service personnel? What does that tell our, you know, other brave, you know, men and women that are serving on the front lines? You know, is our country going to go get them? So we just want to encourage you. Pray for Sergeant Tamarisi. Pray for the military, and we'll pray that he comes home. We're going to stand with him, and we encourage you to do that. In fact, there is a fund that you can contribute to his legal expenses, and we'll make sure that that is related for you as well. We're going to be talking about an awesome testimony from Sama Habib, and she is a former Muslim who found the Prince of Peace. There's a new book, her testimony, and it's called Face to Face with Jesus. And she encountered the Lord. I have not personally read this book. I've heard some really good reports about it. And anytime someone finds Jesus, I mean, this is good. You know what I mean? But we've been praying because we've experienced in you know, the Ramadan season for Muslims has just ended. And typically this is a time historically that many Muslims come to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. They're fasting, they're crying out to God, and the true God, we would say as Christians, reveals himself to them. And although this wasn't her specific experience during Ramadan, she is a Muslim that has found the Lord. There are many Muslims that are not as devout, that they're not jihadists, if you will. Our understanding, according to Bridget Gabriel, that maybe 15 to 25% of the 1.2, 1.8 million Muslims in the world are actually jihadists. I mean, that would mean that's 300 million, kind of like the population of the United States, but it's not every Muslim. So which means there's about another 800 Muslims around the world that don't subscribe to being a radical jihadist and full of terror. And, you know, they're looking, they're searching. And so I wanted to share with you a little bit about an article that was written about this book, so you can kind of get some insight into a little bit about her life and what happened. But basically, she was raised in what they had called a staunch Muslim family, and her country was controlled by communists. This article doesn't really say what country she lived in, but she goes to say that she was delivered by a communist midwife at this hospital, and they had urged her mother to have an abortion. They thought that her mother had a tumor and not a baby. And so her mother had continued to plead and say, no, you know, I'm delivering this baby. I'm going to deliver this baby. And she prevailed. They gave her a C-section, and of course she had a baby. I think a mother would know if she was pregnant or not for nine months. You know what I mean? No, this is not a tumor. Trust me, this is a baby. And this is what she says. I believe I was saved by God for a purpose. She says that my survival was due to the skill of a Jewish doctor in a communist hospital staffed by Muslims. So God used the Jewish doctor to deliver her. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And so she says about how she grew up growing, you know, with an understanding of the Quran. And she understood from an early age that because she was born in as a Muslim, that she would die as a Muslim. When we get back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about her journey and how she encountered God and some of the posts along the way, signposts that kept kind of getting her in the right direction so that she can hear from God. It's going to encourage you in your witness to others. It's going to encourage you in your witness to Muslims that everything that we do to share the gospel with somebody else is never wasted. God uses it all. More when we get right back from this break.
You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget, you can locate us at VFNTV.com. We'll be right back.
Are you or someone you know having difficulties hearing? If you answered yes, then maybe it's time to contact the professional staff at Ears to Hear Hearing Center, where they improve the quality of life for the hearing impaired and their families by testing and fitting and dispensing the best hearing aid for the patient's hearing loss, lifestyle, and budget. Three convenient locations on the Gulf Coast to serve your needs. Don't miss one more word. Call today and be on your way to enjoying the gift of hearing.
Well, you know, when I first started in law enforcement, which it's history for me now, they issued you this flashlight. And the flashlight they issued was like a plunger. I was like... It was so huge. It had to have all these different batteries in it to be able to be a big, bright light, they thought. I don't know. And it was like a plunger. And I remember this one particular time, and you turn it on, and it probably light up I don't know nothing, you know. But of course, if you're in a real dark, dark place, it was nice to be able to at least know your next 12 inches that you could go.
Right.
And we were in a particular area where we had the suspect that burglarized and did this crime, and he ran up in these real dark, dark woods. So I jump out of my cruiser, I lock my doors, which is a good thing, didn't always happen that way. And I start chasing him in these dark woods, just dark, with my little 12-inch beam of light. And I'm out there, you know, and you're just chasing. You get caught up in this adrenaline, back when I used to have adrenaline like that. And you're just running and chasing and running and chasing. And, you know, it's just a miracle that, because you can barely see with that light. And he got so far ahead of me, I couldn't see him. And also my light goes out.
Oh, wow.
Not only was I complaining about the 12-inch beam, but now I had no inch beam. You know, and I'm out here possibly with this armed burglar in the dark, dark woods. And you couldn't even see. I mean, you could see anything. So I put my back against this real big, huge tree, this huge tree. And because I figured, listen, my back's covered, and I start banging on my flashlight. I'm banging on it, right? I'm like, come on, you got to work, come on. I'm not saying nothing. I'm just beating on it, beating on it, beating on it, beating on it. And all of a sudden, I hear on the radio, they said, the canines are here. They call my radio, you can hear.
Right.
We're about to lose the canine dogs after the suspect. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I'm blind. I'm in the woods, probably an armed burglar. And I can't see anything. And all of a sudden, I saw like a little crack of light outside the woods. And I just took a beeline for it because the dogs would have not told the difference between me or the suspect. And I'm running for my life. I don't know if I'm going to get shot by this armed man or I'm going to be bit by this armed dog. You know what I'm saying? And I'm running and running and running. Finally, man, I made it to my car. And long story short, that the suspect was arrested. Of course, the dogs are very good. And got the man arrested. I have him cuffed in the back of my cruiser, and I'm doing the paperwork, and I'm talking, and I finally asked the man, I said, listen, when I was chasing you in the woods and my flashlight went out and I was beating on my flashlight, where were you? And he said, I was on the other side of the tree.
Oh my God.
Is that terrible?
Oh my God.
The one you were standing by?
Yes. Oh, he was on the other side of the tree that I was leaning against the whole time right there.
Oh.
The Lord is good, is he not?
Amazing.
The Lord is good.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome back. I'm John Ramos, and joining me back from the break is Pat and Steve. And we were just talking before the break about a new book written by Salma Habib, and we probably have it for you. It's called Face to Face with Jesus, and she was a former Muslim who encountered Jesus, and she got saved. It's a really beautiful story, and what we're we're kind of sharing a little bit about her story and how she came to know God. We encourage you to pick up the book for yourself because it will encourage you. Her story is an amazing story. She was born by miracle by God, you know, awesome provision, because she was going to be aborted because the doctor said it was a tumor, not a baby. But as she was growing up, she understood that the Quran teaches that if you're born a Muslim, you're going to die a Muslim. And so she thought it strange and surprised when her parents allowed her to go to a Christmas celebration at a church service. And so the father told her, hey, you can go, but just make sure that, you know, you understand who you are. You're a Muslim, and don't lose your identity. And so she says she observed, you know, she saw, and she just kind of took everything all in, and she saw communion taking place and just was like, interesting, you know, that type of thing. But that was her first exposure, I guess, to Christianity. She said that her family prayed 5 times a day, and that's what she saw. But in her country, and this article doesn't say what country she's from, the Civil War broke out. And, you know, we take so many things for granted here in the United States. I mean, oftentimes when we pray, you know, the question is, do we go to God in prayer as our last choice or as our first choice? And do we have to have, you know, all of our cards pulled away from us before we actually seek help from the Lord. Mm-hmm. Well, she goes on to share, I mean, just some horrible things that occurred, you know, when she was living as a child in this country that was torn by civil war, Muslims fighting against Muslims, actually. And they, she said many times they have lost, they didn't have any gas, they didn't have any electricity. And so it made it very difficult to stay warm in the wintertime. And she remembers that her father told her, listen, if we don't get any kind of, they would take their furniture, get this, and break their furniture up so that they can heat themselves in the, you know, so they could stay warm. That's how, so her father tells her, hey, listen, we don't have any more furniture to break up to stay warm. If we don't get anything to heat ourselves, we're going to die. We're not going to make it tonight. Mm-hmm. So her and her brother, you know, go through the town and the village, you know, because you could have got hurt any time. And they go out and they find some wood and bring it back. And they did this under, you know, the threat of snipers all over the place. And, you know, children being killed and all sorts of stuff. She said they made it back safe and they were able to burn some things, you know, to stay you know, alive. And she goes on to say about how they needed to find food, that there was only one place in the city where bread was baked and they rationed, the government rationed it out. Well, each family was allowed one loaf per person. And if you could manage to negotiate, there was massive, massive amounts of people just, you know, at this place just trying to get a little bit of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine just bread.
Wow.
And she says that one day the government shut the whole place down, chaos erupted, and that her sister was able to sneak in through the back and load up a knapsack full of, you know, bread and was able to escape. But she says that, you know, even that was so dangerous. She couldn't believe her sister did that. She said at times that the Civil War got so bad that in their own home, they had to kneel and crawl across the house so that they wouldn't get shot by snipers.
Through windows?
Yeah, through windows. That's how bad it got. And so she remembered that you know, she wanted to pray and getting, you know, find God. But before all that happened, I guess it was a break in the Civil War. She had an opportunity to take karate self-defense courses or taekwondo at the age of 12. And she felt that that was a way to protect herself. Well, she goes to this taekwondo, and to her surprise, they gave her a children's Bible.
Really?
He himself was searching spirituality and gave her a Christian Bible. And things that, you know, God has a plan for your life. There's different things that are happening. He's connecting different people to you. And there's different moments you can go back and start connecting the dots. I want to encourage you that when God moves upon you to give someone the Bible, when God moves upon you to share the love of God with them, to witness, and you don't see, you know, something happen, don't be discouraged. Don't curse. You know, well, I prayed for them and I told them they didn't give their life to God. And so, well, no, bless that, because that was a seed. I think Larry Tomczak says that someone has to hear the gospel 7 times before they actually give their lives to the Lord, or 7 encounters or 7 occurrences. And so those are all just seeds. Well, she remembers reading the Bible and she saw that Jesus did all these miracles and he did all these wonderful things. And she said, Allah never did that. And so she's reading that, and as soon as she started reading the Bible, she had a dream. And in her dream, she said she saw Jesus, and he looked like a Middle Eastern man in a white robe with a very bright light shining out from him. And he told her that he was the only way to follow him. And when she awoke from her dream, she felt this deep sense of peace in her life, you know, about Lord. Shortly after that, in her town and village, the Jesus film was played.
She said
everybody came out to see the Jesus. There was nothing else going on. You know, everybody came out to see the Jesus film. There was 200 people there. And she said her and her family wept when Jesus was crucified.
Wept.
And they were crying and they just, you know, and she tells her father, Allah never did any of this stuff. Allah. And her father says, yes, Jesus was a great prophet. You know, and she says, but Allah never did this. Allah, he didn't do anything that Jesus did.
Wow.
So this kind of goes on and on, you know, for a while. So she's, you know, encountering. And then she had the opportunity once again later on to be invited to a Christian church. She goes, and this particular church had had a pretty large gathering, and she shows up there, and basically in the message, the minister gives the invitation to give her life to the Lord. So she's like, okay, I'm going to do this thing. She gives her life to God. He prays for her. She falls out to the ground. She sees a vision of Jesus again while she's laying out. Jesus tells her everything, and she knew automatically about being saved. She knew about giving her life to him. She knew that her sins were being forgiven. And this is what she says. No person had to explain to me that Jesus was the Son of God. It was revealed to me by Jesus himself. That's what we need. We need people to have a revelation of Jesus for who he is. Listen, all we got to do is be there. We got to be the one to give the Bible. We got to be the one to invite them to come amongst the fellowship. We have to be the one to go ahead and share the word of God with them and help them come to a saving knowledge. It's the Holy Spirit that does all the work, and he's the one. He's the great revealer of Jesus. All we have to do is do our part. Who'll be next? Salma is in the kingdom of God serving Jesus because somebody was faithful to witness. I encourage you to do the same. We want to give a special thanks to all of our sponsors and partners. Visit VFNTV.com and visit our sponsors for all of their contact information, phone numbers, web addresses, emails. Call them today.
You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget you can catch us at VFNTV.com. On your mobile applications, you can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.
There's a level of grace about to be poured out that is striking. It's awesome. It's going to come to sinners and awaken them when they're not looking. Are you hearing me? They're not going to be looking. It's going to get prodigals when the prodigals don't even know they want to go home. They're going to wake up one day and decide, I'm ready to go home. sinners who don't believe are going to wake up and say, I believe. Atheists are going to have some light turned on inside of them. God is about to give us mega grace, and the mega grace will produce mega power and mega conversions and mega outpourings and mega breakthroughs and mega gifts of the Spirit. And I don't know how to measure that. I just know God says it's coming.